Classes in Session.
And welcome to Unlearn 16 Classes in Session, guys. Today, I am incredibly lucky to have Lee McGowan sitting in front of me right now. And she runs, well, the formidable, let's be honest, Twitter page and podcast. I am Politics Girl or Politics Girl Podcast. She has amazing rants. And I don't hand out that compliment quick, just so you know. That's not an easy throw for me. And we're going to sit here and we're going to fix the left today. I think that's what we're going to do, right? We're just going to wind it up.
Just tie it up.
40 minutes.
No problem.
We'll send it out to everybody after we're done and we'll get it all sorted out.
Thank you so much
for joining.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. Honestly, Joe, this is so great. I love your stuff. And I know what you're saying about rants. Like, boy, do you rant. You're a great ranter. And I think truly we need people out here ranting. And of course it's a bunch of mouthy women who are doing it, right? But it has to be said. It's stuff that has to be done. And I think people like to hear things in bite-sized pieces, but they also like to see themselves reflected. Like I often say, I say what people are thinking, or I'm thinking what people can't quite say. And so I end up saying it and they go like, yeah, that's the thing. And when once you're like, that's what I was thinking. That's what I had in my head. And then you can go out and talk to your own people and just have the words to use it. And I think that's what we need. We need more people acting as their own messengers to go out and, you know, spread the word, so to speak.
And that's the brilliance of TikTok, the brilliance, obviously, of the podcast format, which I haven't been in very long, the brilliance of all of these social media streams that enables people with real world experience, whatever level of education, whatever level diverse perspective, to be able to voice those opinions. And I think it's so incredibly powerful. And I think it scares the hell out of a lot of people, which is why you've seen such a push. I know in the United States, speaking of TikTok, you know, people are running around trying to ban it every place they can, from government phones, from university campuses now.
There's a whole bunch of university campuses.
Yeah. The funny part is when you try to censor, it's like nobody sat down with them and said, look, this is how the internet works, or a kid's phone, because they're saying that they're going to ban TikTok from their Wi-Fi networks. Like, it's just going to be a block site. And I'm like, do you think the kids don't have data? Do you think that it's just based on your Wi-Fi? They're just going to be sitting there on their data doing whatever it is they want to do. You're not going to be able to control that. What do you think about trying to ban TikTok?
Well, look, I mean,
you think it's coming from the right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Josh Hawley just tried to ban it for the entire country. He's talking about that in the Senate. So just FYI, I love this party of small government. They have, you know, the Republicans have for years been the party of small government and, you know, keep the government out of my business and freedom and all this kind of stuff. And they are the party. Yeah, every single one of these things. We're going to tell you what to teach, what to say, who to love, who to marry, what sites you can look at, what people you can hang out with, how you can dress your body. You know, like it's the opposite of freedom, the opposite of small government, the opposite of everything. And that's why people keep talking about how, you know, authoritarianism can come to America and is attempting to come to America. Now, as far as TikTok goes, you know, look, like you said, you can't ban anything. And often when you tell people they can't have something, it makes them want it more.
So drives content. Yes.
Content constantly. However, is there something to be looked at with a foreign government owning a social media platform like this and what they push? I'm not entirely convinced that the Chinese who own TikTok don't use it as a hilarious way for us to fight with each other. Like if I was a foreign government that wanted to destroy America, and I could come up with a social media site like TikTok, which I happen to love. But if I could do that and I could say, push the stuff that makes the right hate the left and push the stuff that makes the left hate the right. And, you know, for a long time, sites like mine, which are like, let's understand each other better and let's talk about these issues and let's make it. And I thought, I think it's interesting. Like they would rather push the ones that are like, these libtards or these, though, you know, so that we are fighting and at each other's throat and pushing racism and pushing xenophobia and pushing transphobia, because then we're busy fighting each other and we're not paying attention to what they're doing. So is there something to be said for monitoring, paying attention to, regulating what foreign governments can do in our country? Mm-hmm. Sure. I think there's a discussion to be had there. I think there always is. We should have had that discussion when Facebook started growing the way it did and pushing hate as an algorithm. But just banning it altogether, that feels foolish, especially since it seems to be a way for people to really truly communicate. And we've seen what happens when someone like Elon comes along and tries to take away.
Well, there we go. I think it's hysterical also that we think for a minute that Elon Musk, a singular entity, or you know, I forgot his name, Zuckerberg. He's been out of my head for so long.
These individuals
are able to accumulate this kind of wealth, control the narrative, sit down and decide, and somehow we're more worried about the Chinese government. I think it's also funny because I think that narrative is just saying, well, the Chinese are obviously, like, they're trying to push a narrative where the Chinese are what? Worse people?
Yeah,
I don't know if
us?
We can push that anymore, right?
I don't know if we can either.
Like,
yeah.
A lot of my Chinese students will say.
The communism, we could probably say, not great.
Well, sure, but then you can flip it and talk about imperialism and talk about colonization and talk about, like, when we're talking about the way that we divide and conquer, do we really think we need a foreign government to do that?
Well, not
we
now.
Think about the birth of the United States. Think about the birth of Canada. And you decide how you colonize and how you move into a territory and who you get on your side. And in order to get those people on your side, you need to have an enemy. And you're going to have that enemy for so long as you need them until you need to befriend them to combat another enemy. Those are the birth of nations right there. Yeah. Any nation.
Yeah.
So this idea of divisive politics, everybody's saying it's getting worse now. It's getting worse now. I don't know.
I think it's definitely getting worse because I think that the right, especially like the religious right, the far right, you know, the people that have been pushing for 45 years to get rid of Roe, the people that didn't love it when we got social justice in the first place, didn't love civil rights, didn't love women's rights, you know, honestly could go back even further and they didn't like workers' rights, didn't like the New Deal. Those people have been single-minded in pushing towards what they want, which is a reversal, which really is a make America great again situation where there was a time in American history where things were great. And we have to be honest, there was only one time in American history where things were great for one group of people. If you were a straight, straight presenting white rich man, there is a time in our history where things were
that was
great
a bit better
for
time for you.
Yeah, you could harass your secretary, you could attack your workers, you could kill people building your railroad and be like, whoops, we're so sorry, get new workers. You know, like there was a way to do it. You could have children in your factories, go back even further. You could have slaves on your land, you know, like whatever. There was a time where rich white landowning men, it was freaking great for them. And there is this kind of, now we call them the donor class, that are trying to return us to a time where they answered to no one, where they're not paying the taxes and they're not answering to anyone and they don't have all these rules that we have put on them. All the rules they call woke, you know, all the rules.
Yeah, right.
And they want to get rid of that. And so, yes,
So I think about today and I think about, you know, obviously Trump and obviously the different factions and you know, the ultra right Christian
nationalists,
nationalists, Marjorie Taylor Greens. And then I think to Reagan. And then I think to what those men actually said back then. And I think about what they said and what they stood for and what they manipulated and what they indoctrinated. Reaganomics, if you talk to, I don't know what the percentage is, the majority of the United States population, they would think that was a success. They would list Reagan. Yeah, they would list Reagan as the best capitalist. And Reagan was the one that sort of ushered in this evangelical kind of Christianity at its root because he knew what he had to manipulate. I think the only thing that's heightened maybe in some real time division, but also the perception of division is this, is the fact that you can now get on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter and you can be connected and you can voice all of the things that used to be kept in your household while you're watching the football game, saying God knows what to your family members. Now, in a real way, it's spewing everywhere. And I think it feels messy and dangerous and terrifying and brand new, but I don't think it's new. I just think we're hearing about it now.
Well, I think especially the Republican Party has courted extremism for a really long time. I think they have made bedfellows with some of the worst as a means to an end for a really long time, whether it was Christian extremists, whether it was evangelicals. And nowadays it's militia groups and white supremacists. And, you know, it's kind of like they're not only playing footsie with these people now, they're not doing it in a back room. They're doing it right out in the open. And I think that's the thing that feels different, you know, with a politician like Donald Trump saying there are good people on both sides, when one side was people saying Jews will not replace us. And you're like,
right,
nope, there weren't good people on both sides. That out loud is not what they're saying isn't new. How they feel isn't new. But the embrace of saying it out loud, that does feel new. Because I was saying to someone the other day, it's a little bit like the racism, the extremism, the bigotry, the hatred of women, all this kind of stuff. It's always been in the script. It's just been in the stage direction. So we don't say that part out loud, right?
Like, sure.
And now these politicians are reading the stage directions out loud. So we're going, whoa, it's not like we didn't know it was there, but now they're not even pretending. And I remember when Donald Trump was first newly elected, somebody put up a meme that was like, make racist a shame again. Right. And I thought, yeah, that's the thing. I think that's the difference. It's that it's not like racism wasn't there. Mm-hmm. It's that people are now proud and emboldened. And they're at, that's why they're at these rallies. These, I mean, Trump's still having freaking rallies. Like, if that could be a bigger grift, I cannot believe people can't see it. But he's having them so that like-minded people can get together in seething in their like hatred and pointing and bigotry and really feel kind of a Freudian group mentality buzz from that. And I think that's new. Those kind of
fresh. You go back to World War II in our country and in yours. Mm. And if people really read our history and saw the percentages of white supremacists in the United States, in Canada, saying all of what you're saying, they just didn't have a microphone to say it. So, I mean, we had a prime minister that turned away Jews and said no Jew was too many. He said that crap out loud, but he said that crap out loud when everybody's like, that's right, right? You say that crap, and there came a point where you weren't supposed to. This idea of being politically correct. And I don't know. I mean, we could say the 90s, but not really.
The PC culture was the 90s. That's when I was in high school. And I remember people freaking out about it. It was too much. You know, everything is a pendulum swing, right? So I remember when PC culture came in the 90s. And at my school, there was this whole argument at Christmas time that we should be saying little people and not elves. And we were like, no, like,
does everybody know they're fictional?
Elves aren't real. Like, it's a story. Like, there's not people that live at the North Pole. And we had this whole discussion at my school. Like, it was very serious discussion. Like, I don't think it's appropriate to call them elves. And we were like, oh, and that's where people, and that's honestly where the right wing gets a lot of their power, because there is something to be said for people questioning
too much.
Yeah, an extreme. Yes. They go like, come on, you know, and then it makes an entire group look insane, even though most of the things they're saying is like, hey, we're not using that word anymore because it's actually deeply insulting to a bunch of people. But there's always someone that takes it too far, and then they use that too far as everyone's doing this elf thing. And that's not what everyone's doing.
This elf thing. I remember it distinctly.
Yeah.
Well, you should. I think you really would. And so when we see this, like, and you and I both have the same, I think, the same idea in the sense that if, and I, And when I talk about building, you know, conversations and having discussions, in no way, shape, or form am I ever talking about minimizing what I think, how I feel, what I can prove, what I want to argue. Having said that, you know, sitting down with somebody on the opposite side of that table has incredible value, right? Incredible value. I can sit down and speak about privatization of healthcare and socialized medicine and stand firmly where I stand, but still have value in that conversation to know that there's no perfect system. And the more we talk about different angles and different ways to do things, the better off we all get. But now, how are we supposed to have a conversation when Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying the Jewish population owns lasers that started the forest fires in California? Where's the bridge?
Yeah, no, how are you supposed to have a conversation like you're talking about? I can sit down and talk to you about socialized medicine, and I can say, here's where I stand, and you can say, here's where you stand. Then we can talk about the nuance in the middle there, and we can find something that, you know, they used to say a successful negotiation is when both people leave the table a little bit unhappy, right?
Right.
So that is a successful negotiation. So my problem is that what we're being asked to do these days often is not to have a discussion about, should we have socialized healthcare? Or what's a better way to do our healthcare? We're not even talking about policy anymore in America.
Right.
In many ways, it's like, should gay people exist? And it's like, there is no, we're not going to have a nuanced conversation. Like, I'm going to stand firmly in what I believe, which is, of course, right? And if your position is they shouldn't, or if they are, be about it, and I want to hear a single thing, and we're not going to teach about it, then there's no middle. What are we talking about?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to have that discussion with you. And I think that's where we get into problems.
And here's, and you're never going to hear these words come out of my mouth, but here's where the right has become sort of evil geniuses about it. Because what they've done, and you and I spoke about this, if they've figured out ways to simplify messaging to such a bare bones, embarrassingly, you know, rudimentary idea, so that everybody can stand up and clap at that idea, and it eliminates all conversation, it eliminates all discussion, and it riles up a population, especially when you tap into that nostalgia factor, and they do it beautifully.
Yeah.
And this is what we're up against. And you and I have spoken about it because the left doesn't simplify.
No.
Because we know better.
Well, I think, I think because the left would be technically the party of intellectual thought and big discussions. And the thing is that
always
life is simple, right? So we're not very good at simplifying. And I think the problem is that, I'm thinking of a Mark Twain quote. There's an old Mark Twain quote that said,
I love Mark Twain.
I know, he's so great. He's so great. But he said, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one. And and I'm like,
that's a perfect quote.
I know. And I always think of it when I think of the Democrats. It's like, to really succinctly say this, it's like so, it's like very complicated. So I'm just going to say it in a million words. So like we're super wordy, we're verbose. We like lose the plot unnecessarily when someone like shoots us off topic and we don't have a massive killer instinct as a party to kind of just destroy. So we end up sort of tying ourselves into knots, right? Like Democrats should unquestionably be the party of the people. We represent unions and we represent freedom of speech and who you love and what you do and who you are. And yet we're constantly branded elite and out of touch. And that's just freaking great branding, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Pro-life was great branding because
so
if you
branding.
Say we're the party of pro-life, what does that make the other party? Anti-life, right?
Yeah,
pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Like no one was ever pro-abortion, but that you had no way to, there was like, once
no
they
nuance.
Spun it.
They eliminated the nuance.
Yeah. And then you're in trouble, right? You're in trouble. And I think a lot about climate change. Climate change is actually a Republican phraseology. We were saying global warming.
Right.
And global warming, people could kind of get their head around, even if they like were confused, they could still get their head around it. But they were, the Republicans were like, we're getting killed on this global warming thing. So we're going to call it climate change because the climate has always been changing.
Always changing.
And they chose that, right? That was Republican messaging. And now we're trying to figure out a different way to brand it. And what I'm hearing a lot is like climate catastrophe. But the problem with climate catastrophe is it feels like, well, great, we're fucked, right?
Yes,
like, so then
exactly
it's like, well, I'm not
going
to help
yes.
then because it's a freaking catastrophe. It feels
we're screwed.
Hopeless. I don't want to do
yes.
anything. So there's
yes.
there's great messengers out here in the States. And one of them, his name is Billy Ray. And he's recently been like, we need to call it climate rescue. We're the party of climate rescue, right? So it's all about like, we're here to help. We're going to do the work. Like, we can save it. We have to be on board. And I feel like, yeah, that's kind of more the realm we need to go. Climate rescue. Like, it's, we're going to save the planet. We're going to do good things. And I think if we're the party of climate rescue, then that would make you the party of climate destruction, which they are. And then we can like get them on their heels, you know, because that's our problem, is that Democrats are always on the back foot. We are never offensive coming at you. And then we get in real trouble because we start trying to explain it. Oh, well, here's the thing. And then if you have it, and then we're gone. You lost us completely.
Yeah.
So we have to get off defense and onto offense and stop allowing the Republicans to dominate the messaging. Because I don't think it's about sloganeering. You know, the Democrats this year had Democrats deliver, which they were. And I thought that was good. I used it myself. They had Build Back Better, which is, you know, it's catchy.
I don't
know. But it's,
was it,
it's
was
I don't know,
it,
whatever.
I
mean, like,
every time
but it's
every,
sloganeering. That's not messaging. That's sloganeering.
Yeah,
and I think the
true.
Thing is that it's, what we need to do is brand better. We need a better brand. The Democrats need a better brand, and then we need to sell that brand, right? And I think that's where we need to be looking at it more. Like, the Republicans did us a huge favor by collectively losing their minds. You know, they've gone so extremist with the book banning and banning teaching and not talking about gender or sexuality and banning abortions without exception and letting, you know, mothers just die on tables and, you know, trying to cut Social Security and letting kids get slaughtered in their schools. Like, it's bad that you think, like, how can we lose this messaging to these people that are literally monsters? But I think our messaging should technically become easier, but we can't just do their crazy vote for us, right? It has to be who we are. This is where we stand. This is what we believe in, not as a bumper sticker, but as a bite-sized thought. So Americans don't have to spend too much time thinking
that's
about who we are. And we don't leave a whole lot of room for debate.
It's the short letter.
Mm-hmm.
That's my, you just gave me my most favorite quote of all time. I don't know why I've never even heard of it,
but
it's the short letter. And you're 100% right. And I think and it's interesting because you talk about the Democrats as like a collective, and we all know that's not the way anything works. Nothing works as a monolith. In fact, if it did, it would probably work better. But you
that's
have
why people like authoritarianism because it's like one.
As long as I'm in charge,
yes,
as long as I'm
me.
Running the show, I'm fine.
I think it would work great as long as I'm the dictator.
Exactly. But I think that we have to start, like, I think you start, and I honestly believe, I spent so much time thinking about this, you do have to start with freedom. Because the Republicans have used that word and broken it into just painfully jagged edges that don't make any goddamn sense anymore. And somehow they've been able to manipulate it and say, you have freedom because you can't get an abortion. You have freedom because I won't let your kid read To Kill a Mockingbird. You have freedom because your kid has to fulfill pre-described gender roles that we've been doing for the last 3,000 years. There it is. How we have up here, listen, you guys have your fair share of idiots. We have Jordan Peterson. So I'm waiting for him to move to Florida or something.
He belongs
to be
in Florida. Let's
you.
Be honest.
But his notion like when I hear him speak, and he obviously never debates anybody with any significant sort of rationality anymore. He just won't. He won't have those conversations. But when I hear him speak about academic freedom and then say in the same sentence, we should defund feminism and Marxist ideology and any critical thought philosophy from all of the major universities today. And I'm like, dude, how can you say those two things in that same breath?
Yeah.
How can you say that? How can you say all of my rights are getting taken away? I can't say what I think. And then exhale and then say, and people listen to him, right? Same mm-hmm. with DeSantis. Is exactly what they're similar, you know,
vibe,
beasts, so to speak. But I think we have to start there, and we have to start with education, because if we don't, it's so much easier to manipulate. Yeah.
Look, Donald Trump wasn't wrong when he said, "I love the uneducated."
He loves stupid people.
It's 100%. That's the stage directions out loud again, right? Like that's what that is. And you know, if we're dumb, and quite frankly, nowadays, if we're poor, we are too busy, or we are too stressed, or we don't understand.
Scared and terrified.
So
yes.
Why shouldn't it be? I think the thing is, though, to speak to your point about education, and we can come back to freedom because I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's exactly
it. I think that's where freedom starts.
When you poll people, especially in America, freedom is the number one thing that they want above all. I mean, like it is heads and shoulders mm-hmm. above every other thing, above equality, above pay raise, about everything. It's freedom.
Which is funny because if you don't have those other things you're talking about, you're not going to get freedom.
Mm-mm. But I think you're right that you have to keep hitting freedom. But the Democrats should be able to absolutely steal this. Done properly, steal this. We're the party of freedom. We want you to be who you want to be, love who you want to love, worship what you want to worship, you know, the people you want, wear what you want to wear. We believe in the American people. We believe you have the power to make your own decisions. We don't want big government. These are the people that keep saying they're small government. They want to control everything. We believe in freedom. We don't need the government telling us what to say and what to think and what to read. We don't want government mandated pregnancy. We don't want the government to choose what religion we are or what form of that religion. We believe in freedom, right? I think we could take that in a heartbeat from them, a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I think that's the play.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, no.
No, but I was saying when you were saying about Jordan Peterson and him saying like, we're not going to have any feminists, we're not going to have any Marxist ideology, we're not going to have any of this. And I think one of the things we have to start doing is instead of meeting people like they're making a good faith argument, I think one of the best things we could do is use strategic ignorance. And this happens even when someone's being a bully to you and you're in middle school, right? Strategic ignorance can be very helpful. Someone's like, oh, well, you wouldn't understand that. You know, people say this with blondes. You wouldn't understand that, Lee, because you're blonde. And you could be like, why wouldn't I understand it? Because I'm blonde. And they could be like, ha ha, see, you totally don't get it. I'm like, no, I still don't get it. And what they have to do is get to the point where they tell you directly that they think you're stupid. And then it's not funny anymore. And then they end up looking like an ass. So the thing is I think that there's something to be said for that. So when they say, we're going to take all Marxist ideology out of school, that somebody says, what do you mean by Marxist ideology? And then just like, wait, because they don't know. A lot of the times they're spewing a bunch of, you know, what do you mean by no feminist teaching?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what I mean? Like, and you're like, no, I don't. What do you mean? And make them be like, well, I don't think women are,
specify.
You know, what they can't do is what Democrats have done for too long is nuance. They've spent so long in bumper sticker land, force them to defend their bumper sticker, which by the way, they cannot take what they say at face value. And instead of responding with being defensive, be a little bit more dismissive. Like, let me just repeat what you just said. Did you just say that we should get rid of all classes that have to do with women? And they're like, well, I mean, and then get them in that position where you're like, that's interesting. Because I think we talk about politics a lot like it's a game. We play by the rules, they cheat, you know, but it's not a game. politics is completely different because the results matter to all of our lives. People think politics don't matter. And I always say, like, here's the thing. Actually, politics matters to every single thing you do in your life.
Everybody.
From the day the day your garbage gets picked up, to how fast you're allowed to drive, to whether you get to live through a pandemic. That's all politics. And now you can see politics is going to tell you what you can learn in school. It's going to tell you how many kids you can have. It's going to tell you who you can have kids with. So you may as well dial into politics because it's going to make all your decisions for you anyway. So you may as well have a say.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, 100%. And I think, but here's the thing. You're right. People don't want you to be right. People would rather. And I mean this with no disrespect or condensation. No?
Condensation? Well, like to throw some water on myself? Condescension? Should we? Oh, we could just get a little damp. We get very damp. There's no condensation in this podcast.
I can't be condescending when I don't even understand the word. Here's the bottom line of the average person. And I truly believe this. And I mean no disrespect. They are worried about their kid. They are worried about mortgage payments. They are worried about why eggs cost so much money. They are worried about their family who happens to be sick. They are, right? And then we, you and I, ask them to be worried about these big, big issues. And they're just like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I can't, even if I wanted to. So the way to avoid a level of cognitive dissonance and stress and anxiety is to say it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, right? The environment's going to be okay because we will build the technology to fix the environment like a giant, I don't know what they envision in their head, like maybe a giant vacuum of some sort in the ocean or something. We will fix that later. You know, Elon Musk is going to send us all to Mars. We will be genius enough to fix that. Stop making me separate my compost from my recyclables. It's too much.
Yeah.
You know, don't get every Thursday night. I hate garbage day. Want to know why? Because it's just like this acid-eyed job of what goes in what bin and who's collecting it on what day. And my life is relatively privileged. But if I had three kids and dinner and this is happening and it's an example of the complexity that really is life. And every person I think is looking to simplify, which is why you have a Republican say something so simple and we people drawn to that because it makes us feel good.
Yeah. Right? Which is why we end up with authoritarian dictators because 100%. They come in like Trump did and say, I alone can fix it. Is your life crap? That's because of these people. Because of this happened to you. That's because of them.
Right.
I'll fix that. I'll get rid of them. I'll take rid of this.
Easy.
I'll make your life better. You have done everything right. It's these people that took it from you. Let me fix it for you. And you go, good, that would be great. I'd love to not be worried about it. Like, thank you so much, right? And the problem is that's why people are drawn to dictators. But dictators never work out right because as soon as you've given them the power – then they just take it from everywhere. And you're like, wait a second. Now I'm not allowed to leave my house this time. I'm not allowed to go here. I don't have any, like, we don't have the TV stations anymore. Now I'm just listening to this. And now I'm afraid to go here. I can't talk to these people. I can't be seen with these people. Like, you don't realize how much you gave away in trying to allow somebody to make all your decisions for you. And I think the thing is that we have to understand that we're in a position now where we could go one way or the other. We're literally at a crossroads. And unfortunately, it doesn't matter how busy you are, you have to dial back in. But what we can try and tell people is if we get a functioning working government that also pulls us away from authoritarianism, if America is the democracy they've always told people they are, but we all know they are not, but we have the potential to be, if we pass voting protection laws and we get rid of the filibuster and we talk about getting rid of the electoral college and we put more power in the states where the Democrats pay attention to the states and not just federal government, and we start actually representing the people because, what other country has, you know, has the popular vote winner losing the presidential election. You know what I mean?
That's
true. But
just a different way, but similar.
We just do
outcome.
It in a funny way, yeah. But ultimately, that doesn't feel like democracy. And we need to represent people. And then we need to make their lives easier. we actually need to have government that, like, you shouldn't have to be working four jobs to just keep food on your table. It shouldn't be impossible to buy a house. And that is something government could do. Government could come in and say, I'm sorry, everything after your third home, you're paying a 90% tax rate on, you know? Right. If you are a foreign investor, like they did in Canada, you know, you want to come in and be a foreign investor, we're going to charge you an extra 45% tax, 15% tax, whatever. That makes it unappealing. Down here in the States, we have entire neighborhoods that are bought up by hedge funds and like Zillow. And then they turn around and they rent the houses back to us. And we can't even buy starter houses. That is something a government could come in and say, nope, nope, no giant corporations can buy single family dwellings. Those go to single, you know, those are things that would actually change people's lives. And then they wouldn't have to be so strained that they couldn't pay attention to their government. We have been told our whole life to not talk about politics. That's what people teach us as little children. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. And one of the two things that caused the biggest problems in the history of the freaking world, politics and religion, right? So the only people that benefit from us not talking about politics and not talking about religion are the leaders of politics and religion that don't want us paying attention to what they're doing. And we have to say, you know what? We're not doing that anymore. We're going to talk about all of it and we're going to start changing it.
I have two painful points. Number one, we are, because this is the thing we have to address, and it's a sensitive thing with you Americans. We have to talk about the elephant in the room, which is capitalism.
Oh, God.
We can't, and that's the problem. How all those things you just spoke about, you can't come near to fixing them without talking about how you regulate big business. And the notion of free enterprise and everybody does whatever the hell they want is a failed state notion.
Yeah.
It is a doomsday prophecy. And yes, it caused the United States to build and Canada to build in a certain capacity over a very, you know, short amount of time in an oppressive way. But on the backs of who? And on the backs of people from where? And now the chickens are just coming home to roost. But nobody, you can't say, I can't go into the States and talk about capitalism.
I don't.
You get kicked out of places. Come on. True.
Look, we do love our money. Here's the thing. I think there is a.
We
do love our money. It's not, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's a capitalistic country. It's how you know, it's American exceptionalism. It's like, I made this. I pulled myself up from my bootstraps. I did this company. I should be able to keep every single cent of it. And I think the thing is that you have to start by addressing some of it. Like Biden created a bill this year that will tax the biggest corporations in America, a 15% flat tax to start with. Because currently most of the biggest corporations in America don't pay any tax, right? Like it's a joke. Yeah. They're making billions of dollars. The fact that we have this many billionaires is a failed tax policy. It's not
Dragonomics.
It's not based on skill. It's not based on brilliance. I mean, if you think Elon Musk can take us to frickin' Mars, the guy can't run Twitter. So like, I'm not following him to a different planet. That is out of your mind. But it is a tax policy that allows people to keep that much money and hoard it to themselves. That is a flawed and failed tax policy right now. So when people talk about make America great again, you think about it, you go, what time period are they talking about? And mostly people would say, I don't know, like the
50s, 60s.
Yeah. Right. And so it's like white picket fence, you know, 2.5 kids, the mom and like the thing with the little apron. And like, that's the perfect America, right? Okay. Sure. At that time, the highest tax rate for the richest people was between 75 and 90% after a certain amount of money. You make a certain amount of money, you're in the normal tax rate. Then you make over that, we're taxing you at 75 to 90%.
There we go.
So when that side talks about make America great again, you're like, okay, great. We're going to go back to a 75% tax rate on anything over $50 million a year. That would change our country, and the majority of the country would get behind that. You know what would make another huge difference? If we had a massive inheritance tax change, right? So there's a lot of people in America and probably Canada too that say, I created this business. I worked really hard. I deserve to keep all my money. This is the like, don't tax me anything. Go fuck yourself. Right. I made this.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, great. You made a ton of money. You made this great company. Good for you. You keep it. You up to $50 million. You're in the regular tax rate with the rest of us. After $50 million, we're going to tax you a lot. So it behooves you to give your money away. It behooves you to start new companies. It behooves you to try and cure cancer because otherwise we're going to tax you for a fortune. But when you die, you can only leave X amount of money to your heirs. And, you know, it could be a fair amount of money, but it's not like your kids never need to work again. Their kids never, this kind of guaranteed wealth where we've created a brand new aristocracy that's just handing down their money to other people, to their children. And then you get these third generation of just dumbasses that don't know how to do anything, but they're so rich and they create TikTok.
And they never like, worked.
TikTok. No idea. And most people will tell you that those kids are miserable. They have no purpose in life. They don't know what they're doing. Those are the kids that go on drugs. These are the poor parents that are like, I don't know. We've had him in this rehab center in Utah. I don't know. Like, and you're like, that's because they have no purpose because you have given them so much of a safety net that they're tangled in it.
Yeah.
So we could also change the wealth tax and the inheritance tax. So it's like your kids can, you know, have your beach house in Manhattan Beach and they can get your ski place in Vail, but then they're done. They're tapped out at 50 mil. So now what are they going to do?
But now you're asking, and again, this all comes back to capitalism. It all comes back to the way the structure works. And I don't know because now you're asking for that top 1% to tell on themselves. And that top 1% has funded political campaigns right across the board, no matter who they are and what side of the aisle they sit on. Who's ever going to pass that legislation and then get elected after 2 years or after 6 years?
The same people that are going to pass legislation to like reverse Citizens United, that corporations are people and you can put unlimited amounts of money. Half this shit devolved after that decision. You reverse that decision. You say, we're running on reversing, you know, Citizens United. Corporations are not people. They can't make decisions on their corporations like Hobby Lobby saying, oh, we can't pay for our employees' birth control because of our religion. You're like, you're a company. You don't have a religion. Mm-hmm. You're a company. Oh, well, we do. We're people and we can give as much money as we want. That Citizens United decision destroyed America. We need
when
to
was
reverse
that?
That.
What year was that?
Oh, God. Look it up on the internet. It's 2014.
Google it.
Fuck, I don't know.
Jesus.
Dates. Give me a break.
Second.
It's a torturous decision. It made a huge issue. And if we could reverse that, that would make a tremendous difference. And I think also you just get behind the idea that like, keep as much money as you want if you're alive. After that, we're taking all your money. So you may as well, you know,
build the entire rainforest. Yeah, everybody hates on Bill Gates for buying up farmland or whatever he's doing down there that people are all riled up about. But that man's not leaving his kids anything. He's been very vocal about it.
Yeah.
He's like, if my kids, I'm going to leave them something. But if my kids, after everything they've gotten, all the advantages in the world, can't figure out how to stand on their own and they need my $200 billion, no.
Yeah.
That's going to go. When Bill Gates passes, I swear to God, we will find a cure for HIV. Like that will be the final put. Well, that's where he puts all of his money, right? Like he challenges governments left, right. I have another problem, another big problem. Nobody talks about this. We no longer, and this is a scary thing that politicians just can't say out loud, but somebody needs to say it. We no longer have a federal government or a state government that operates with impunity or outside of the international economic order. We do not, in any country on this planet, unless you're talking about North Korea, which is completely shut off, you are dependent upon other countries and decisions other countries make for what products are going to cost money, for what things are going to be scarce, for all of that. And we look to our leaders like, fix the economy. You just ask them to fix the world economy because nobody's being honest and saying we are no longer driving the ship. We are part of the boat and we just have to manage it, right? Nobody's saying that. you know, now people are saying it in a terrifying way, like the Marjorie Taylor Greens. When you start hearing shit like everything should be made in America, cut everything. Right? Well, that's what they're saying. And yeah, they're
like
saying
the anti-globalist campaign, but it's really mostly like nationalistic bullshit.
And now all of a sudden you become an isolated entity. Good luck with that. Good luck remember with that. How that played out.
Yeah.
Right? But how do we address that? Because it's a very, at the end of the day, international economic organizations and dependencies and interconnectivity has to diminish democratic choices. Democratic control over your own nation. The idea that this sovereign nation, it's been a fallacy for a very long time, but it's incredibly flawed now. So we tell people to vote and get involved, but on the flip side, nobody's admitting to it. They kind of do sometimes, but not really. Nobody's admitting to the fact, well, guess what, guys? We're all on the same, we're all playing a bit of a game right now, but if China decides something different, or if, you know, I don't know, Cambodia does something different, or that impacts us and I can't control it.
Yeah. I think,
how do we,
yeah, no, I think one of the best ways to see that in our, if you're listening and you're having trouble kind of, this is globalism. This is what people talk about all the time. You know, like the word global.
The WEF. I hear people talk about the World Economic Forum one more time as though it's this surprising entity.
No.
And that we used to have complete control over our country's money, but now we don't because they do. No, it's always been a side effect of capitalism and international economic trade. That's
well, we
it.
Also kept selling our debt to foreign countries, which was problematic. But I think the thing is that you look at inflation, you know, down here in the States when we had the midterm elections, you know, they were like, this inflation is terrible and Biden's done this. And people were like, I'm sorry, is Biden the president of Belgium? Is he the president of France? Is he the president of, you know, Lithuania? Because everyone is having inflation. It's global inflation. It's all blowback from, you know, shutting down the ports and shutting down commerce during the pandemic. Like, you could see globalization. You could see how interconnected we are because of the pandemic. You could say, oh, well, we can't get our chip from China to get on a boat to come here so we can make the car that needs the chip. You know, like, it's all connected. And how essential it is that we learn how to work with others. So this idea of isolationism and nationalism and hyper-nationalism and Christian nationalism, none of it works because we don't live in that world anymore. However, we also should know that authoritarianism is on the rise around the world. For the very first time, democracies are less than 50% of the world's governments are democracies now. And that's terrifying because a lot of people are like, just fix it. You know, we goes back to that strongman dictator we were talking about before. Just fix it. And they go to a strongman. They usually elect a strongman within a democratic environment. And then the environment becomes undemocratic afterwards. Like, you know, anywhere from Belarus to Hungary to Russia, you know what I mean? Like, it started democratic and then it just went really quick downhill. But the thing about these new autocracies is that they are also globalists. They are working together. Anne Applebaum did the most amazing article in The Atlantic. And the front of the magazine was "The Bad Guys Are Winning." And it was about how these guys are working in what she called, and I thought it was so smart, she called Autocracy Inc. Like, if you think of it like a corporation, and there's all these companies and they're no longer working with like an ideology, like we believe in this. It's not that. It's that they believe in their own success and their own money and their own retained power. And then they work together. So, you know, like Maduro in Venezuela, like he should have been ousted, right? But he was being propped up by money from Saudi Arabia, propped up by people buying things from Hungary, and propped up by Russia, and propped up. Same thing happened when the Belarus had their election and Lukashenko didn't win. He didn't win. Mm-hmm. And yet he took over anyway. And the people revolted. They were out in the streets. They were protesting. And literally, Lukashenko gets on the phone with Putin. He's like, what am I supposed to do? These people are rioting. Like, you know, and they're like, you didn't win. We know you didn't win. And Putin's like, I'm going to send down my people that'll explain. And you just have to like strategically arrest certain people, strategically kill certain people, strategically do this. And it's not like you don't have to kill everyone. You just have to kill the right people. There's an actual plan now. So the autocrats are getting it together. What I think is that the democracies have to get it together, which is why, to take it to a totally different place, it matters that we're all supporting the war in Ukraine, right? Because they are the actual front line of the fight between autocracy and democracy. And we have to make sure that the democracies of the world retain power because we're so close to losing it. And then we'll never get any of those things we want because we can't stop the globalism. But the question is, who controls the globalism? Is it the autocratic Inc., Autocracy Inc., or is it Democracy Inc.? Because one of them will.
Well, I think that the sad reality right now, and I don't know if you get around this, and I know I'm starting to sound like a Canadian communist by the minute, it's the people. Well, but you can't. I love it that we deny that somebody, an individual, Elon Musk's wealth makes me insane because he's on trajectory to be the world's first trillionaire.
Yeah. I mean, listen, somebody said the other day, if you can lose $200 billion in 1 year, we need a wealth tax. We need a wealth tax. Like, if you can lose that in 1 year and be like, then guess what? We should be taking it from you. We shouldn't be relying on the benevolence of billionaires.
But here's the problem. Absolutely. But here's the problem with that. And this is why I think it's a money problem. And I think the autocrats are using the money to prop themselves up. Like, it's very much connected because the United States could do that. And Elon Musk could move countries. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
All of a sudden, you have these multi-billion, hundreds of billions of dollars say, I'm just not going to be here anymore then. If that's what you guys think is the best avenue, I'm going to take my ball and go home. And so that's another problem with this sort of globalist idea, this idea that I can go anywhere on this planet as long as I'm given a level of freedom. Now, having said that, you're right. Democracy does serve to do something because, you know, Andrew Tate's finding out the hard way. Isn't he, though?
Yeah.
He runs his mouth, says, I have so many passports. I moved to Romania because I just pay them off and they could give a shit. Now Romania's like, God, this guy's chirping us an awful lot. Everybody thinks it's about, I have no doubt that he traffics women. I have no doubt that he does all of these horrible things. Absolutely, it's how he made his money. But I do understand the Romanian government's looking at this going, he can't just be out here saying whatever he wants, making us look ineffectual and weak and whatever, like he can run the show. So if you're a smart billionaire or millionaire, you learn you are not protected in the autocratic world. The only way you have protection is by using your billions to magnify or support the growth of democracies in order to have most of your freedoms protected. And you might get taxed, but you won't be in jail. Or you won't be sent to an island somewhere or whatever, right?
Yeah. And I think, honestly, there's also like, you have to make the democracies of the world more appealing. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you could pick up your money and, you know, people are like, watch out for Trump. He's going to end up in Saudi Arabia, you know? And you're like, yeah, but then he has to live in Saudi Arabia. Like, the thing is that you have to make the democracies of the world be more appealing.
Yes.
That it's, you know, like, yeah, you know, I get taxed more, but it's like Canada, you know, like, oh, I get taxed more, but I can like drive an hour north and be in the woods and like, that's worth it for me. Or like, I get my health care and I never have to worry about, you know, I don't have, I mean, God knows your health care is having a disaster right now, but in general, the idea, because you know, I grew up in Canada, right? So when I grew up in Canada, before I became an American citizen, I was in a huge car accident when I was 16. At no point, as I was lying, you know, thrown from the car, lying there, I was like, I can move my fingers, like I'm not paralyzed, okay, you know, but at no point was anyone like, oh, gosh, this ambulance is going to cost so much money. Like fixing her is going to cost so much money. That was not the question. It was like, oh, that part is not the problem. The problem is that she's like very broken, right? That was the problem. That's the, should have been the problem. In the States, that's not the problem, right? So that is a completely different. There's, you have to make your country so appealing that, yeah, it's worth paying the taxes for healthcare. Yeah. It's worth paying the taxes for, you know, insurance or whatever. Like, my house is protected because of X, Y, and Z. I live in a safe area. My kids can walk to and from school, you know, because there's only a certain, I mean, like you talk about the percentage of the world that's that rich. We know how small it is. The 0.11%, the 1%, you know, so we have to make it appealing for the rest of us and we have to tax those people. And if they move, they move.
And on that note, I'm going to end with Mark Twain's quote. I love, we figure stuff out. I think we figured out freedom. We don't have to redefine. We got to actually define using common sense knowledge what freedom means and what it means to have a government that supports that and that advocates for that and that facilitates a system that is going to grant the most of that. That's it. That's where you start. And you start there. And I say start with education because it's the kids, let's be honest, they're way smarter than most of us anyways. You can't eliminate that. And I think, to be perfectly honest, all of this censoring the right's doing, I honestly think it's another shot in the foot because you can't. The kid has a computer, you stupid moron.
Yeah, you banned that book. What do you think they're going to look up first?
You just made them download it. So dumb. But no. On that note, I want to say the Mark Twain. Give me the Mark Twain quote again before we sign off for today because it's a perfect quote.
Okay.
Write it down. Twain, everybody get a pen.
The Mark Twain quote is, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one.
It's perfect.
So good.
It's a perfect quote.
It's so good.
Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I appreciate it so much. I hope we do like a whole bunch of these.
I think so. I think this must be done.
Anytime you want on here, please come on. Can you tell everybody where to find you on TikTok, on Twitter, on podcasts, on
I'm very easy. I am politics. Come on down to Los Angeles. No, here's the thing. I am politics girl everywhere. So on Twitter, on all those things, I am politics girl. But if you just type in politics girl, it comes up. It's politics girl on YouTube. You can find the whole podcast, which I get some great people. And we talk just like this, like about really nuanced stuff, but like people that have real power and can really do things. And I love having them on to be like, well, but why are you doing it like that? And they are marvelous people. And then I do my rants. So that is all over social media under Politics Girl. And like, please follow me because at the end of the day, I always say, you know, first of all, we have to understand, which goes back to your education, right? When we have knowledge, when we understand, we care. And when we care, that's when change happens. So it all starts with knowledge. And that's what we try and do.
Amazing. Thank you so much for hanging out with me for the hour, guys. I will see you next Tuesday. Same bat time, same bat station. Have a great night. Dismissed.